As I reported on April 1st, I gave the keynote address to Geraldo Rivera's charity Life Work 50th anniversary. It helps people, children and adults with autism. Autism, as you may know, takes you off the board socially and many times economically. That is, you cannot operate because of your physical impairment, okay, the way that other Americans do. So therefore, you cannot pursue happiness at the same level that I can or you can or Geraldo can. And that was the main point I made in my address. Roll the tape. There was a guy in England named John Locke. And he was a philosopher, kind of quasi-politician guy. And he came up with the concept of the pursuit of happiness. In 1689, Thomas Jefferson, a very learned and brilliant man, picked up on that concept and incorporated life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness as a right, a human right that had never been done before in any country on the face of the earth. Now, if you think about your life, everybody here, all of us here have obtained some kind of success, and we were able, I believe, to pursue happiness, right? And the key to our whole society and the battle, the culture battle that we have, is giving everyone else that opportunity. And there are segments of our society who say, well, we don't have that same as you, the white privilege has or whatever. I throw all of that out the window. I don't buy into any of that. What I buy into is people helping other people to succeed. And joining us now from Cleveland, Ohio is Geraldo Rivera, who on Monday, May 16th, has a golf outing to benefit LifeWork, LifeWork.org. You're not going to play golf, Rivera, unless it's miniature golf. You're not going to. Are you going to be out there?
I'll be hobbling using the 7-iron as my crutch.
Boy, that'll be a gruesome sight. But I want people to support Life's Work. And I want to mention that this is at the Old Westbury Long Island Golf and Country Club. And people can sign up and come and play and you'll be there, correct?
That's absolutely right. It's the 35th year. Sean Hannity always makes a cameo. I'd love to get you there. I don't know what your golf game is like. Probably a lot better than mine.
I can tell you, I can usually get it through the windmill. I can usually get that. I'm not a golfer, but I'll try to get there if I can.
I just want to thank you again for coming and giving that stirring speech. I thought that it was really right on. Everybody understood the concept there, the pursuit of happiness, very, I think, articulately zeroing in on what it is that we do. We allow people with developmental disabilities who otherwise would be warehoused to have a life and pursue happiness to the extent that they are able. And you are very generous with your contribution. Sean also weighed in. We raised over $900,000 that night for the cause. So I want to thank you again. You've always been a very generous, even though I disagree with you on, almost everything, including that today was Monday, we'd probably say today was, that aside, you've always been very generous. You've always responded to any of the requests I had to help these nonprofits, and Life's Work's near and dear to me, obviously because of the exposés I did on the institutions way back when, Bill.
Yeah, 50 years you've been involved with this. Have you seen an improvement, a basic improvement in the autism world? 50 years is a long time. And to remind people, Geraldo, as a young reporter for WABC Channel 7 in New York, went to Staten Island when there was a terrible facility. They were abusing people with autism like crazy. He exposed what they call Willowbrook. It shut down, and then Geraldo got involved, which is extremely noble, of course. Have you seen improvement in this whole area?
Well, the biggest improvement, Bill, as you cite, is the closing of the institutions, the big institutions, the warehousing where despicable conditions were allowed to exist because the population, I was essentially voiceless. You know, no one was defending the handicapped, and they couldn't defend themselves. And the state of New York and other states, as a result, you know, tried to maximize the number of people they could care for rather than emphasizing the quality of care. Plus, the concept of institutionalizing the disabled was, they're not criminals. They're disabled people, emotionally, physically disabled people. They're not people with schizophrenia. They're not people with bipolar disorder.
No, they're not dangerous people.
They're not crazy people. They're handicapped people.
And what Geraldo does, once again, is they build houses, they buy houses, they put the autistic people in the houses with supervision, with medical care, and it's a million times better than what was happening. All right, let's go into some politics. I'm going to ask you a series of questions. I just want simple answers, so I'm a simple man. I don't want a lot of philosophizing here, okay? So it is estimated by the Border Patrol that they're going to have to encounter 8,000 migrants when the COVID Title 42 is lifted in May by the Biden administration. First of all, do you understand why President Biden, in the face of massive illegal migration and drug smuggling, and that's something you report on as well, from Mexico, massive, all right, fentanyl overdoses all-time high, heroin overdoses all-time high. Do you know why Mr. Biden, who has never even been to the border during his administration, okay, has such a lax policy down there? Do you understand why?
Well, I would make the assumption, Bill, that you know, it is a liberal Democratic agenda item, and he's following the strong arming by the Squad, AOC and others, to be as favorable as he possibly can toward this population. I think it's a terrible idea. Why you have Title 42? We're talking about new variants. And I thought that it was always a kind of a phony reason to restrict immigration by single males. Those are the ones who are being turned back. But I, at least it was something. I believe that Title 42 should, if the rationale for 42 is existing anywhere, then I think, why not keep it? Why not at least
it doesn't make any sense. Just to recap so people know, that gives the border authorities, because of COVID, the right to send anybody back to Mexico, including asylum seekers. I don't know whether you saw the article. We're going to do it tomorrow here on the No Spin News. Great Britain is now trying to implement a policy where all people asking for asylum to live in Great Britain would be expedited to Rwanda, Africa, and would have to live there while their asylum hearing is adjudicated. They can't live in England any longer, or Scotland, or Wales, or Northern Ireland. Now, why I want to mention this is, we're not extremists here in America. This is a problem, this unfettered migration, in every single country in the world. Do you understand that?
I do. The whole world wants to live in the United States, more importantly. Yeah. I mean, it's everybody wants to live here. But there are some great, let me just very briefly tell you that my translator and driver in Afghanistan, who was with me for 11 very rigorous, dangerous assignments, very loyal, saved my life, Craig's life. We succeeded through Fox News to get him, Akbar Shinwari, here to Cleveland with his family. There are also, some great mosques here. There's a substantial Afghan population here. We're also expecting a large group of Ukrainians to come. There are a lot of Ukrainian immigrants already here in the Cleveland area. America welcomes refugees. We welcome asylum seekers. We just need order. We need to do it in a way that not only is humane and compassionate, but also is practical.
Right, for the rest of the country. Yes or no question. Is Biden's immigration policy a good thing for America?
No, it's not.
Okay, all right. See, now we didn't have to yell or anything.
That was an epic battle. That's as close as I ever came to a fist fight and not had one.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm glad you would have probably kicked my butt, Geraldo, you know. And I wouldn't be as handsome today as I am if that happened. All right, so 35 years ago today, Geraldo Rivera launched the most successful syndicated broadcast of all time. You may remember The Mystery of Al Capone's Vaults. So Rivera relentlessly promoted this. 30 million people, as I said, showed up to watch it. And it was live April 21st, 1986. So it wasn't exactly 35 years ago, but close. 2-hour broadcast. And they opened the vault and nothing was in it, Rivera. I still don't have those 2 hours back.
It's 36 years, and it was not empty. There was a Gilby's gin bottle in there. There was a stop sign and some other trash from the era.
So put yourself back.
It was very embarrassing to me. You know what was really in there? The biggest ratings of all time. And I was unemployed at the time. So the day after it aired, the ratings came out. I was ridiculed from coast to coast. Actually, it was in 16 different countries live. I was ridiculed. I was embarrassed. I opened up. The room service waiter came up and he handed me 22 messages, written messages, all job offers. So
that's
I went from
amazing.
Being the most famous unemployed
that's
man
amazing.
In America to being one of the
I mentioned the Al Capone thing and killing the mob. but when you were there and you saw there was nothing there, did you panic? Did stuff go through your mind like, holy, you know what, I got to fill another hour or so? What was going through?
I was not going to, they were digging and digging and digging. And I was not going to find anything. And I thought to myself, I've been fired by ABC. Everybody I know, everybody in the world is going to be watching. I am absolutely humiliated. This is the end of everything. And I, at the end of the show, 15 minutes later, I gathered my wife. We went across the street to a Mexican restaurant. It's not there anymore. The Hotel Lexington's gone also. So I went to this Mexican restaurant and got tequila drunk. And then I was dragged to the Hyatt Hotel.
Very good.
And
that
was the end of my professional life.
You know,
But as it turned out, it was the beginning.
Outside of me, you've had the most flamboyant career ever. Final thing, two okay. weeks. From tomorrow, Killing the Killers, The Secret War Against Terrorists comes out. I sent you the book because your daughter is in the book. She was in a terror attack in Paris, France, and we were able to go very, very deep into that attack thanks to your daughter, who I guess is at Yale now, right?
Yale Law School. She graduates next month.
Okay. And I want everybody to know it's an extremely compelling story. I just sent it to you. I don't know whether you have time to read it or not, but the whole book is just, you're going to love this book because you know so much about terrorism.
Right. I can't wait. It was 2015 in Paris. We knew that she was out for the evening. We worried first that she was in that theater where over 150 people were killed. Thank God she was at the soccer stadium. But we didn't know that President Hollande, at that time France's president, was in the soccer stadium. So three suicide bombers attacked the soccer stadium. Our daughter was inside and they blew themselves up. They couldn't get past the French security. They blew themselves up. But then my daughter was stranded there and we were live on the air, talking.
I remember it. It was quite an adventure, and that is chronicled in Killing the Killers. Hey, Geraldo, once again, the golf outing is at the Old Westbury Country Club on May 16th. So you can putt with Geraldo, give him a hard time if you sign up. I'll try to stop by on that Monday.
That'd be great.
And look, good work with the Life's Work. It's lifeswork.org, and we want everybody to try to help out if they can. Thanks, Geraldo.
I appreciate it.
Good to see you. Everything is expensive these days, you know that. The government is printing trillions of dollars in consumer prices higher than ever. If the government continues its printing and spending, the dollar could continue its free fall and lose its coveted role as the world reserve currency. Let's hope that doesn't happen. But there are a few things you can do right now. American Hartford Gold can show you how to protect your money, your retirement, your hard-earned savings. against inflation by helping you diversify a portion of your portfolio into physical gold and silver. Start with a short phone call, and they can have physical gold and silver delivered right to your door or put inside your 401k or IRA. So please call or text them right now. Tell them Bill O'Reilly sent you. Call 877-444-GOLD, 877-444-GOLD, or text GOLD to 65532. Again, that's 877-444-GOLD, or text GOLD to 65532. Now, there's an interesting new podcast that has caught our attention. It's called The President's Daily Brief with a guy named Brian Dean Wright. Okay? So Mr. Wright is a former CIA guy, and he takes a different point of view on many important issues. Here's what he said on yesterday, I guess it was, about Ukraine and the USA. Go.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are tumbling towards war, 8 months after we just ended and lost another one in Afghanistan. The Pentagon this very morning is talking about new permanent bases throughout Europe. We've talked about that on this show. Joe Biden is sending advanced weaponry and billions of dollars of it to Ukrainian fighters. He's also sending tactical and operational intelligence, which means our spies and satellites are now drawing an X on the forehead of Russian soldiers and effectively pulling the trigger.
Very provocative. And joining us now from Arizona is Brian Dean Wright. So I want to walk through this because people may not know what your overall point of view is. And I think we have to establish that. Is Putin a villain?
Yes. That's a pretty straightforward one. What he is doing in Ukraine is awful.
Okay. So in your opinion, he is a villain. Is he a threat to NATO?
Yes. That is also true.
Okay. If Putin succeeds in Ukraine, and that would mean taking over the government in Kyiv, which it doesn't look like he's going to do, that would be a huge victory for Putin and for the totalitarian forces on the planet. Is that your point of view?
That's fair as well. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. So why then would you criticize the United States and NATO for doing everything possible short of a shooting war? All right, because I don't want that. And I've actually said we shouldn't be sending war planes, we the United States, to Ukraine. If Poland wants to do that, fine, but the United States shouldn't do that. It's a little bit too provocative. That is my opinion. But if we can defeat, we being the United States and NATO, if we can defeat Putin by sending a massive amount of arms to Ukrainian fighters, which so far have performed pretty well, way above most expectations, that would be a good thing for the world. But you dissent there.
Well, let me add a little bit of context. So first, we have to ask ourselves the question, who's in charge of our war effort? Because that's, in fact, what we're in right now.
Well, that would be Biden. War.
I'm sorry.
I can answer that. That's Biden. He's the commander in chief. He's in charge of the Pentagon.
Right. So there are two groups of folks. The Pentagon are actually the war planners. They're the ones who execute whatever it is they propose to the president, and the president says, yes, we ought to do that. The point is, the people in the Pentagon who are putting together this war effort, and indeed Joe Biden, are the folks who have been part of the 20-year war in Afghanistan that we lost. And we just lost that to a bunch of goat herders. So the question that I have from a just basic fundamental level is it smart to have the people who just lost our 20-year war be in charge of the one that we're just starting here against Russia, a nuclear-armed state?
But wait a minute, though. There's no other choice, all right? Because Biden was elected president. He selected, and he carried Milley over from Trump, the Pentagon brass, the people who, as you rightly put it, plan military operations. So we don't have a choice there. It's up to Biden. It all comes back to Biden. And apparently Biden believes that the Afghanistan exit was excellent. He said it was. Now, no one believes that. The Pentagon doesn't even believe it. But again, Biden is the commander in chief. He's got to sign off on all military operations. So I'm not sure that your dissent here, you know, I understand if I were the president, I would send advanced weaponry to Ukraine in the hopes that Putin would be partially defeated, embarrassed, humiliated, which he is being now. I would do that. Would I be wrong?
So the second piece is this: beyond our own internal capacity, I don't think that we should disregard that question, but let's move on to the second piece, which is this. What is Putin and his war hawks in Moscow? What are their red lines in terms of what we do that would then offer up a degree of retaliation, right? That's the other question that people in the Pentagon and the CIA and indeed the White House are wrestling with. I believe very, very strongly that when we move from more traditional, more conventional weaponry, which I support sending to Ukraine, because that will bog down Putin, that should be the goal, because that will force him into some degree of diplomatic conversation, especially if we can bring the Chinese on board with that. I think that's how you solve this. When you start moving beyond that, advanced weaponry, tactical intelligence, when we basically are puppeteers of Ukrainian fighters and we are all but pulling the trigger, now we start tiptoeing up. In fact, we start crossing that red line in Moscow to they say, look, we are now going to respond likely in an asymmetric way, which is just a fancy way of saying cyber attacks, very serious cyber attacks, or they're going to start physically attacking, killing soldiers abroad, personnel abroad, et cetera. So then all we right. as a country should be asking ourselves this question: are we ready for that kind of asymmetric response? Are people ready? Are families ready? Are our communities, our businesses ready?
I don't think anybody can answer that question. I can't. Look, Americans don't want to shoot war with Russia. Nobody wants that. And as far as a red line is concerned, it's whatever Putin wants the red line to be. Putin can fabricate any kind of scenario he wants. Even if we didn't send sophisticated weaponry or didn't give the Ukrainians intel from our drones, Putin could say we did. He could make up anything he wanted to make up. So I don't think you operate out of a sense of fear of Putin and Russia at all right? You basically try to give the Ukrainians as much intel and weaponry as you can that the American people would support, and so far they're supporting our weaponry to them, without, you know, an invasion by the Baltic states or some crazy thing like that. Because I think if you allow Putin to define the red line, he's going to define it any way he wants. Am I wrong?
No, look, he's an old spy. He understands there's a gentleman's game in all of this. He bogged us down in places like Afghanistan. So he knows that we're going to supply some degree of probably conventional weaponry. He knows that. He's going to probably blow it up or try to. He has done that. So there is a box of behavior, both spoken and unspoken, of how far each side can go. So he is a villain. That is no doubt. He is an aggressor. There is no doubt. But I don't think he is absolutely crazy. I don't think that those around him are crazy. I think they are calculated. So
all right.
I think
let
that
me
we have to appreciate
Let me
that.
Challenge that. All Please. Right. Putin's invasion of Ukraine is crazy. All right. He is destroying the economy of his own country. For what? For what? For nothing. Now, that's crazy. Okay. Now, is he going to drop a nuke? Is he going to do this? He loves to threaten. But I'm telling you, and I'm doing this with all due respect, Mr. Wright, because you're a smart guy and you understand how the world works. And you're absolutely right. In a rational world, okay, you could sit down with a Putin, but he's not rational any longer. You can't sit down with this man any longer. There's no upside for Russia doing what Putin did. None. Even if he gets Ukraine, he's a villain forever. His economy is going to be damaged forever. Go ahead.
Look, Bill, I hear your point, and I understand the argument, but we're making an assumption there with that argument, and that is he's an irrational actor. So unless I see high confidence intelligence that tells me that's true, I'm going to assume that there is still a degree of rationality both
inside the Kremlin. Do you think it was
rational
for him to invade Ukraine? Is that a rational act of a responsible leader?
From what I'm hearing from people, he was told and he understood that he would have a very different outcome. Kiev would fall within the first week and people would embrace him with open arms.
All right. That's so after he gets his ass kicked for the first month, then he says, well, let's try to negotiate a settlement. He's not doing that.
Well, that the question remains, how long can he fight? He's got 60,000 troops that he's ordered up. So it shows that he has a degree. I'm sorry?
He can fight forever. He can, look, he doesn't care about his military, how many people get killed. He can fight forever. They got the biggest standing army outside of China and the United States on earth. But let's go to China now. All right, so a lot of this is about the Chinese who are watching how the United States and NATO protect Ukraine, what they do in Ukraine. And I'll submit to you, and I could be wrong, that China and Taiwan, that's a setback right now. Because China goes, do we really want all these economic sanctions and our army and navy having to fight and take huge losses? Because Taiwanese are going to fight. It's not going to be Hong Kong. They're going to fight. And they're well armed. And the United States will be compelled to help them fight there. So I think what the Putin situation reflects on is what could happen in Taiwan. Have you factored that in?
Absolutely. But I think President Xi of China is much, much different than President Putin of Russia. They have two different personalities. They have two different sets of intelligence. And they have two different sets of goals. So Taiwan for China is absolutely a key part of its reunification, its recapturing of Chinese glory. But they are much more patient. Much more patient. They are willing to take decades and decades to get there. So I do hear your point that they are watching this very closely. They're seeing how the West has become united. But they're also seeing how countries like Saudi Arabia, UAE, South Africa, Brazil, all still back Russia, even after all these sanctions. Indeed, India is buying massive amounts of Russian oil.
So what? That doesn't matter, though. The economic sanctions are crippling the Russian economy. Yeah. And because Chinese economy is an export-based economy, Brazil ain't going to help them out. Once the United States shuts down buying products from China and Australia and Great Britain and Canada and all of Europe do so as well, she's got a world of hurt. And that's what's holding him back. So he's watching how bad Putin's going to be hurt. I'll give you the last word.
Look, I think that what China does absolutely is being colored by what's happening in Ukraine. At the end of the day, I think you're starting to see a profound change in the world from the West being in charge of it to very clearly Beijing and to a much lesser degree Russia are starting to reshape what we do and how we think. So if we believe that the United States and the West are really driving the world's economy and always will, I think we're starting to see a huge change there. And our assumptions of what China or Moscow will do, I think that is flawed, frankly, and we're going to be learning some painful lessons because of that.
All right, but U.S. intel was good in the run-up to Ukraine, I think. The CIA and the NSA, they nailed it. Didn't think Putin would do it. I didn't think he'd be this crazy to do it, but the U.S. intel seems to be pretty good. Would you agree?
No. If you recall, Joe Biden said to President Zelensky that he should effectively step down and he should leave. From people I've talked to within the community, they did not think, that Putin would do it, right? So, in fact, he did do it. We released a bunch of intelligence, very low quality. Turns out all those were what we would call rumens or guesses. It was just largely gossip. So the intel community got it wrong. But I will say, in their defense, Putin threw out the playbook. They went against a lot of their own internal ways of fighting. So they assumed that they would be welcomed as liberators. So in other words, the U.S. intelligence community thought that the Russians would do as they have done in the past. They didn't. And my goodness, the Russians blew it completely. And thank God for that.
Yeah, and I hope we can accelerate it. Mr. Wright, thanks very much. The podcast is a President's Daily Brief. Where can people find it? Apple Podcasts, Spotify, all of that?
On all of them.
Okay. And we'll talk again, I hope. Thanks for taking the time. The Talking Points memo this evening is at the Biden border disaster. So if you think it's bad now, wait about 3 months in June. And it's a catastrophe because of one man and one man only, Joe Biden. Inflation on him. Border on him. You can just run down the problems in this country, one man. Mask mandate, we'll get into that in a little while. Him. All right, so the border situation is the worst public policy I have ever seen in my entire career. Because there's no reason that the federal authorities are not enforcing immigration law at the border, because they know the narcotics are flooding in, killing Americans directly, and they know that millions of foreign nationals are showing up here unsupervised. Now, I'm a simple man. I have one simple question. What does the lax border policy do to improve the lives of anybody in this country? One thing, how does the lax border policy improve any of our lives? Give me one. And don't say, well, the fruit pickers or the hotel workers, they can get legal visas to work. All right, we give out more than 1 million of them in this country every year. They can come here legally, but they don't want to because they're structured and then they have to go back. Okay, so here's some stats. Since Joe Biden entered office, 15 months, he's been in 16, but the stats are about a month behind. All right, 1,137,776 people have illegally entered the USA that the Border Patrol knows about. So the estimates are that 50% they know about and 50% they don't know about. If that estimate is correct, that's about 2.4 million in 15 months. It's just, and in the last year of the Trump administration with the Remain in Mexico policy, that number had fallen to about 600,000. So it could be four times as high because Biden knocked out the return to Mexico policy, which, of course, the federal judge reinstituted, but the Biden administration says, well, we don't really care. Okay? All right, that's number one. Number two, drug seizures at the southern border. Last year, 913,000 pounds of drugs were seized. Okay? Almost 1 million pounds of narcotics, illegal narcotics. And again, maybe they seize 30% of them. The rest get through. So if you're in the White House, you're going, geez, I better do something about this, right? Wouldn't you say that if you were president? I would. Biden hasn't been to the border. Not once. Not one time. He sent Kamala. Kamala didn't want to go. She landed in El Paso, and 20 minutes later, she was on another flight to L.A. or whatever it was. So this is a catastrophe. In the middle of this catastrophe, Biden says, you know what? The only thing that's working is Title 42. And Title 42 is the United States government can turn you back immediately if you're a foreign national because of COVID. Immediately, you get turned back to from whence you came. Title 42. And so Biden goes, yeah, I'm going to knock that out. I'm going to knock it out. I'm going to challenge the mask mandate on public transportation for Americans, but I'm going to knock out Title 42. And illegal aliens coming across the border don't have to wear masks because they are not obeying any laws anyway. Okay, this is truly insane. I'm laughing because it is funny. It's tragic funny. So Biden, in the middle, oh, he knows 1 million pounds of narcotics coming across. Ah, you know, I don't need to go down there. I got to hang with the Easter Bunny on the Easter egg hunt. I don't have to get out of the border. Okay, so Title 42, I told you yesterday, Biden is going to have to extend it. Even though he says, I'm going to knock it out on May 23rd, that's not going to happen. Here's my soundbite yesterday. Go. And March encounters, 50% were processed for expulsion under Title 42, which goes away in May. That's because you come from a place with COVID, Mexico, you can go right back to Mexico. Biden's knocking it out for no reason. There is a revolution within his own party in the Senate against Biden knocking out Title 42. I will predict he will rethink that, change his mind. And today, an announcement from the White House, they're rethinking it because all these senators who may lose, all right, in elections, they're going, don't knock out 42. That's Tester in Montana, Sinema in Arizona, Kelly in Arizona, Hassan in New Hampshire, Warnock in Georgia, he's going to lose. Herschel Walker will win that race, I believe. Manchin, on and on and on and on. Is about two dozen of them are going, you can't do this because you're destroying the Democratic Party. So in addition to hurting every American, on the political front, Biden's hurting his own party, okay? And, you know, right now, there are about 7 million foreign nationals who have crossed illegally that the Border Patrol even knows about. About 7 million in the past 20 years. Total illegal aliens here, I would say 15 million. So some of them overstay their visas, some of them, you know, all kinds of ways. But it is, you know, it's like, all right, if you don't want immigration law, Congress, just knock it out and say open border, come on in, everybody. Because that's what we have now.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
New polls says that marijuana is now acceptable by most Americans. Here we go, CBS. 1,612 adults, Democrat 35, Republican 30, Independent 35. Should recreational marijuana use be legal under federal law? Favor 66%. What are you, stoned? Opposed 34. By party, Democrat, legal, yes, 79%. Not legal, 21. Republican 49, legal, 51 not legal, and there you go. Now, this is a big turnaround. It happened for two reasons. One, the media glorifies pot use, and on Monday, we're going to show you that. Pot's great. And number two, the progressive left wants pot and hard drugs legal. I want everything. Do what you want. Now, the reason I oppose, and I have to tell you, full disclosure, I have never smoked pot. I think pot's stupid. I don't have any interest in that at all. I don't even drink alcohol because my theory is if I got intoxicated, I'd be in the penitentiary. All right. And I'm holding to that. And on a serious note, I was a high school teacher and I saw what substance abuse does to children. And in my own family, I saw family members ruin themselves through inebriation. All right. So all in all, I don't want any part of this world. Now, the kids. Once you legalize pot, and I think, what is it, 22 states have it now or something like that? Once it's legal, and the heroin addicts can go in and buy all the pot they want and come out and sell it to your 12-year-old because that's what they'll do, so they get money to buy their heroin. All right, you understand how that is, how that works? All right, the heroin addict walks in, the methamphetamine addict, the cocaine addict, they buy the pot, they take the pot out, they don't want to use it. They sell it to 12, 13-year-olds. They get money. They buy their drugs. Do we all have it? Do we all understand? Okay. So that's pervasive. And that's what's going to happen. Once a child becomes intoxicated, the childhood vanishes. The brain, the juvenile brain, cannot process intoxication. The adult brain can't. If you know anyone who's drunk or inebriated much of the time, you don't want to be around those people. Now, the segment of America, oh, I smoke pot, it didn't hurt me. It's not about you, Clyde. It's not about you. It's about 13-year-olds. The message should be to every child in this country, don't intoxicate yourself. It's bad. But that's not the message in America, is it? So this is crazy. The poll, 66% favor? I don't think so. I think it's probably about 60-40. But most Americans want their pot. And if you're a parent, you're smoking pot in front of your kid, that's child abuse. Got it?
Hey. This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Okay, final thought of the day. Roll that tape. ESPN2 last night reran the 2021 Corgi races. It's held in Auburn, Washington. Look at those Corgis. Look at them. Holly the Terror Dog was stunned and shocked. She felt that they were being exploited, even though I exploit Holly on BillO'Reilly.com. These Corgis ran around, and this is according to DailyPaws.com. Angus the Corgi won the race. Now, Corgis are the cutest dogs in the world, but before you run out, number one, they're not easy to get in the United States, purebred. They're all over Wales. That's where they come from. But here it's hard. I had to go to Georgia to get Holly the Terror Dog. And I think she resents it to this day that she's not down there. But anyway, they're very nice dogs. But they shed. So along with buying a Corgi, you have to buy a giant vacuum cleaner and follow the dog around. I have never in my life, and nobody told me. My kids wanted a Corgi. So, of course, all right, I don't know Corgis. I don't know they're shedding. I mean, if I didn't vacuum religiously, we couldn't breathe in this house. But they are adorable dogs. There's no doubt about it. And I, when I saw that Corgi race last night, hey, Holly, come on, watch this. Holly, nope, not watching my brethren be exploited. Anyway, thank you for watching and listening to the No Spin News this evening, and we'll see you tomorrow.